Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast, but without Bob Mackiewicz. And it is our favorite because we've only had one guest host. It's his return. It is from The Athletic. It's Jonas Siegel. And we're doing this from Jonas's condo. Jonas, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
No problem. I'm actually just worried that the fish tank is going to be too loud. Can you hear it?
I can hear it a little bit, but I can do like noise reduction things.
Okay.
So yeah, this one for people listening, because you know my place is silent.
Yes.
This one may have a slight fish tank noise in the background. What are your fish? What are your fishes? Is it fishes?
Well, no, it's one fish.
Yeah. What's his name?
His name's Charlie. He kind of killed all the other fish.
God, that happens so
often. So it's a bit of a problem because we want to get more fish. Like we want to have this cool tank with lots of fish.
Yeah.
But I can't bring in more fish that he's just going to destroy. So we're kind of, we don't want him to die, but we also would like to get more fish. You know, it's
okay,
a dilemma.
So
what do we
you're
do?
You're not rooting it to die, but you won't be too upset when Charlie eventually does meet his ultimate
How
demise.
Long do fish live? I don't know. It's like 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, there's a slug in there too. He hasn't killed the slug, but that's about it.
You know, you could just by mistake overly feed Charlie for a couple of weeks and sort of, you know,
no,
speed up the
do
process.
I wouldn't do that though. Like, I could just get rid of him, but that
you could flush him down the toilet right now.
Yeah, but that would be cruel. He deserves it. Like
he's killed all your other
Darwinism.
Fish.
He survived.
So now I got like 100 fish questions, but I want to get to talk about a lot of the Leafs. Obviously, Leafs taking on Edmonton tonight.
Do we get to talk about the Giants and Eli Manning?
We'll end
That's insane.
Yeah, we'll end with some Eli Manning conversation. Of course, I'm a Giants fan. I'm bitter. And what people might not know is that Jonas is kind of into a little bit of everything. So we could do an entire hour and not talk any hockey whatsoever. But first thing, elevator etiquette. One of your elevators is out. Someone's moving in, so there's one elevator, and it takes forever. And here's what bothers me, and I've probably talked about this before. I'm standing there. I've pressed the up button. The up button is clearly lit red, indicating, yes, the button's been pressed. The elevator is aware. And the next person who comes by looks, sees the button, and still hits it. And that infuriates me, because like I've done the job for both of us. You don't need to hit the button. I've taken care of it.
I think there's like a thing where people think if you press it again, it
comes faster.
Comes faster, like it calls it again.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's not how it works. Like once
no.
it knows that, I don't know how elevators work, but I imagine once it knows it needs to come down, it just comes down. It just,
yes.
You pressing it again, does it make it come down?
I don't know. There was any truth that hitting the button multiple times would make an elevator come quicker, wouldn't we all be banging the button as many times as we could?
Yes.
So anyway, just, I needed to get that off my,
my
chest.
It's a big problem.
Before we talk about the Leafs game tonight and bigger picture stuff, one of your most recent columns on The Athletic, and anyone listening, go sign up for The Athletic. It's not expensive, and the content is great. It'll make you think about things a little bit differently, or it'll bring up ideas that you had not previously thought of. Which
I think there's discounts, too.
And okay, that,
if you get in contact with Myrtle, he'll give you a discount
as
well.
Yeah, that bugs me. Okay, because I was one of the first people. I didn't get any discount. But if I had just waited and held my money back, I could have saved money.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the way the world works. Though.
I know,
you buy something in a store and then it goes on sale.
Yeah,
what
I know. How much Leo Komarov, how does he feel about analytics?
I don't think like obviously I talked to him and wrote a story about that for The Athletic.
And that's one of your most recent columns.
That's yeah. I don't think he's dismissive of it. Like what happened is like I wanted to know, you know, how he thought the line was playing, like his line with Kadri. And he said, you know, well, you tell me, like, what do you think it says? And I said, well, the numbers say it's not good. And the numbers, like, Kadri, the reason I was interested in it is Kadri was on this point streak, I think the longest point streak of his career, like 9 games.
Yeah, now at 11.
And yet if you looked, no, it got snapped. He's got like 10 points. He's got points in 10 of the last 11 games.
Oh, okay.
But the point was, like, despite the fact that he was putting up all these points, that line was getting filled in. So it was like initially, the idea was like Kadri's on this crazy point streak, and yet his line is not playing that well. And then it kind of got me thinking about Leo Komarov's place in it, and that the fact that, you know, his possession numbers are bad. So obviously, knowing that and talking to Komarov, he apparently has heard a lot about, you know, his possession numbers being bad. I'm sure lots of people on Twitter have given him grief.
Maybe the odd person.
Yeah, so he kind of... The problem with a lot of hockey players is I don't think they understand how it works. I think it exists in media. I think it's the same thing for people who don't understand like how some of these stats work and what they're trying to say. It's the same thing with coaches. It's the same thing with management. Like there's this issue, I think, in hockey generally that there's still people who don't quite get what it's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And say, well, I don't understand math, so I don't understand possession. And it really isn't that complicated. I'm not good at math. I've never was good at math. It's just kind of
people will be shocked to hear that you're not good at math.
Not good at math at all.
Yeah.
But it's just understanding the concept of what all these things are trying to say. And so he just didn't seem to understand how much we can actually track. Like, so when I brought up that the possession numbers weren't good, he's like, well, you know, we start all our shifts in the defensive zone. Okay, well, we have stats that show how much you start in the defensive zone. And yeah, you do. But it also, you know, if you're starting a lot in the defensive zone, your possession numbers are not good, that means you're not succeeding at the role that they're giving you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the issue with Leo Komarov. I just think Mike Babcock has like this really great faith in him as someone he can trust, and understandably, you know, given the last couple of years. But maybe we're getting to a point where, you know, he needs to move down the lineup.
Is he, and I wonder about this, are players like that, are they wary of these numbers? And it's part of it, maybe they don't understand it, but also are these numbers, because if you're someone like Komarov and smart people like you come, you know, say these numbers show that your performance isn't that great. If I was a player, I would be nervous of those numbers. Those numbers would scare me because I'm worried those numbers could eventually lead to my career demise.
Certainly. But that's every kind of
number. Oh no, that's meritocracy. That's life. I'm just saying, if you're a player, like 5-7 years ago, negative things about Komarov in terms of statistical stuff was not as widely available as now.
That's and
if
the you're best someone like, part about this.
It is the best part for you and for the fan, but maybe not much for Leo Komarov.
But not much for Leo Komarov, but maybe for someone else. Like, that's the thing. Like, as much as it might say something poor about one guy, that also means that it's saying something
really good
about someone else. Like, it allows us, like this, I can't believe that I was doing this job 5 years ago or whatever it was without this kind of stuff available. Like, how, it just seems crazy that we didn't have these numbers available to kind of help confirm or not confirm what our eyes were seeing. Like, we would look at Leo Komarov and be like, you know, why are his points down? Or, you know, he's a good defensive forward. Like, that's why the Leafs have him there. But now we actually have these metrics that tell us whether that's true or not. Like, you know, Roman Polak's a really good example. Like, back in the day, you know, you'd look at Roman Polak, he's big, he's heavy, he's strong, he's physical, he's mean. And you'd say, well, he's really good defensively. But no, you know, like, he's a 6-7-8 D. You know, he's okay. He's really good at, you know, he's pretty good at killing penalties. But now we have, like, these numbers that can back up or not back up, you know, these suspicions that we have. It's just like whether we're prepared to use them.
And this is the point in the interview where we say, yes, that the analytics is only one part of looking at a player and their positives and negatives within a team. Because people right now are screaming, you know, that it can't just be about the analytics.
Of course, but like there's so many things. Like,
no, I'm giving that proviso because, you know, someone's going to, you know, because people do... there's a lot of people that react negatively to the metrics. And I think because there are some people in the community where, you know, they got a chip on their shoulder, just like a Raptor fan gets angry that there's not enough basketball coverage. Some people in the analytics community will really be pushing the numbers when it's one portion, an important portion, but it's one portion in the Bula base of hockey analysis.
But if you're not going to go by the numbers, what are you relying on? Like, just your eyes? Like, our eyes, the thing is, like, I remember having this conversation with John Chyko when I was still with Canadian Press. And I can't remember exactly the line, but basically the line was something along the lines of numbers aren't biased. Numbers are just numbers. They don't care. They have no biases like people do. Like, people see things. The numbers, yep, are just the numbers. They just say what happens. So they have no stake in the game. Like, they're just telling us what's going on. That's the thing. That's why I find them helpful, because like, I may think something just with my eyes. Like, Jake, yeah, Gardner was always a good example. Like, you'd watch him with your eyes and you're like, a couple times a game, you're like, what is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you zoom out and you're looking at all the times he's on the ice and how much he has the puck. And you're thinking, well, you know, generally over a course of a game, he's a big help to your team. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I love that he said it. I love. All right. We would agree that Mike Babcock is a very good coach.
Yeah.
So then why does he trust Leo Komarov if the numbers say maybe you shouldn't trust him so much?
Couple things. Maybe he's late to realizing it. Maybe, you know, coaches, we've seen it, you know, they can stick with a guy too long just because it's a known commodity. He's probably asking himself, you know, who am I going to put in that position? Who's going to give me that?
Yep.
And maybe I can provide an answer. He can provide an answer. He might not think that someone is good for that role. He might be looking at, you know, the depth of his lineup. He might be thinking this gives him a more balanced lineup by putting Komarov there. I don't know. Like, there's lots of reasons why he may be slow to this. Like, I mean, it's funny. Like, Mike Babcock, we think of as, like, this really progressive coach, and he is in many ways. But he also dresses Matt Martin in just about every game. And, like,
Twitter hates that. Well, man, they hate Matt Martin.
Again, like, it's the numbers don't care.
Yes.
The numbers are the numbers. And Matt Martin, you know, he's been better this year. He's actually been okay. But given the option that they have, you can't really make the claim that their lineup is better when he's in it when you have players sitting out
who seem
to offer more.
Oh,
like, absolutely. So Mike Babcock's kind of like this really interesting figure in this whole thing.
And sticking with him for a second, and eventually we will get to Matthews versus McDavid. I mean, we have to. Leafs are playing Edmonton tonight. And just where the gap is between them. But is there a chance, and I don't know, these are just rhetorical questions, that Mike Babcock may know something that we, and I know, I'm going to get we out of it, you and James Myrtle and people that really invest in the numbers. Is there a possibility that Babcock, there's something that he knows and there's a factor there that we can't see, which is why Komarov is there? Because, you know, the Leafs spend a lot of money on so many in sports science and some of these things. I feel like the information has to be there for Babcock to access.
Well, that's a really good point. They may have stats that say something totally different than possession. Like, some of these stats that we have available are kind of basic. Like, they have a whole stats and research team. I forget what the name of it is. Like, Hockey Research and Development or some weird thing.
Some
like
group,
that.
But they're not going to allow that information to get out to the public.
So they would have, like, they had the War on Ice. They have the War on Ice guy. Like, they probably have metrics that are way better than ours. Does that mean Mike Babcock's using them? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe so. Like, we don't have access to that. And what the NHL provides is pretty basic. And that's one of the, I don't know, can I swear on here?
Yeah, of course.
It's one of the shitty things about the NHL is, like, you compare it to the NBA. The NBA, like, there's all these crazy stats that you can, like, find, like, how successful a guy is shooting from the left elbow versus the right elbow versus the corner versus the top.
Yep.
We don't have anything. Mm-hmm. Like, we just got them to, you know, upload some of these, you know, possession stats, but there is so much more that we don't have. And, like, I was writing a story about Nikita Zaitsev a couple weeks ago, and that was one of the really difficult things about writing that story is all the numbers we have say he's okay. He's not as good as they think he is, but maybe they have all these numbers that suggest that he's better than I think he is, or that the numbers that we have available think he is. So that's one of the hard things about that.
Oh, yeah. And do you think part of it is just the more conservative nature of the NHL as to why it's, you know, taking longer for the stuff that you're talking about in the NBA with just, you know, how much more analytical they are in terms of player performance versus the NHL?
I don't know if it's the NHL. I don't know if it's the PA. Like, there could be an idea on the NHLPA side of things where they think it's not good to have those numbers out there because maybe it's going to hurt certain guys, like you mentioned before. But it's also going to help so many other guys.
Okay, yeah, I want, actually, that reminds me of a question. So Leo Komarov is a guy who gets a lot of time, and your eyes might say one thing, but the numbers say something that's a little more negative. Give me a player, someone on the Maple Leafs, or it's just someone prominent, but if there's a Leaf that comes to mind, where we may, the eye test and the more casual fan may view this player in a more negative, but the numbers say a different story. And if you can't do the Leafs, is there a player in the NHL that's well known? Because if Komarov is at the one end, you just talked about, then there's other players where the numbers help. Who's a player where the analytics help?
I'm trying to think. I'm looking at my depth chart.
Now, if you want, I can...
You know who's a good example of that?
Yeah.
And it's kind of changed. I think there's, like, an old reputational thing with this guy. But it's changed, at least as far as possession's concerned. James Van Riemsdyk was known to be a horrible possession player.
Yeah.
Last few years, basically under Babcock, good. And now that is that a big change with Van Riemsdyk? Maybe. Like, he's told me, you know, he's tried to become a better defensive player. He's tried to improve, you know, his all-around game. A lot of it might just be how Mike Babcock's using him. Like, he's putting him in situations where he's not going to have to go against other top lines, where he's not going to have to start, you know, a lot of shifts in the defensive zone. That shows some evolution. It shows that they're using him properly. So he's like, I don't know, maybe he's one example. I'm trying to think of other guys.
No, if, by the way, at any point during this interview, if a name just pops in, just yell it out. Even if, you know, we're talking, you know, if we're talking about Eli Manning, you know, you can scream at a player. What is the gap now in terms of just talent and production between Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews? Because when Matthews first came in, we're like, okay, the gap is huge, which was nothing against Austin Matthews. It was all just about praise for Connor McDavid being this generational upon generational talent. Where is the gap now?
That's a good question.
Now, when you say that's a good question, do you actually mean it's a good question?
No, it
is. Or are you stalling? Or is it because you don't have a good answer right away, you flatter me with the, that's a good question.
Now you're stalling for me?
Because now, right? Now I'm stalling for you. And it's, you can say, I don't know.
The problem is, it's a hard question. Like, how do you quantify it?
Very simple. Goals, assists, and plus minus. That's it.
Well, so we did a thing. The Athletic did this event before the season for like fan appreciation.
I couldn't be there, by the way.
And there was a panel, and I was on it with Tyler Dello, and this question got brought up, and I said, you know, I don't think it's as crazy a gap as people think. And he said, I completely disagree. You know, Connor McDavid's like in his own space. I still don't
think
that's... Thanks,
Buzzkill Dello.
I just still don't think that that's the case. I think McDavid's a better player. I think...
Of course.
He just has that one element. Actually, not one element, but like the fact that he can get to that speed and still make plays like that. You know, Austin Matthews doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
But Connor McDavid, you know, he had 30 goals last year. But I don't think he's the same type of scorer. I don't know if, you know, we'll see how both guys become like 200... the quote-unquote 200-foot player, like all-around players. I don't think it's a crazy big gap. I just think they bring different things. They're different types of players. Like, McDavid's more like that typical playmaking center, just to like an insane degree, because he can do things at such high speeds. Whereas Matthews, like, we don't typically think of centers being shoot first and like being scorers. And that's why I think it's really interesting, like the type of player you pair with Matthews versus the type of player you pair with McDavid. It's sort of like the type of player you want to pair with Crosby versus, I don't know. Like with Crosby, like you can just put like guys who are going to be hard, like hard in getting pucks back, go hard to the net, kind of finish off his opportunities. Whereas Matthews is going to shoot first. And when he does create opportunities for his teammates, he needs guys like Nylander who can kind of capitalize on that. You know, like Mike mm-hmm. Babcock talked about why he didn't want to play Marner with Matthews. And one of the things he brought up was, you know, Nylander can shoot the puck. And so when Matthews creates some space, it creates an opening for Nylander, and he's got the shot to actually finish. Whereas Marner, you know, his first instinct is to pass. I don't know. Like, it's a convoluted way
and
of
yet,
saying, I don't know.
Yeah. And yet Nylander... last game was on the fourth line, and at least by practice lines from yesterday, might be on not on Matthews' line. It could be Hyman and Mitch Marner. Now, we don't know by the time the game starts.
Sure.
So I'll go to this question instead of speculation of...
But the long answer is I have no idea. Like, they're both really good players.
Yeah, but no, but you did bring up the gap might not be as large as what we think it is.
Well, what do we, like, how are we going to... How do we measure that? Like, how do you figure that out? Like...
I guess it's hard because you also don't know who they're playing with plays a big part in just their overall impact, which sort of goes to my question of what do you think? Like, I think it was Myrtle that first brought up, one of you guys used the term, and we've stolen it and we use it all the time, rosterbation. I don't know if I can use that on TV.
I didn't use that.
Okay, then that was Myrtle?
Never heard that word.
Oh, I've heard that. I think then that's a Myrtle term. I'm gonna check. I don't know if I can use that on TSN radio. I almost busted out this morning on the morning show. And then in my head, I'm like, maybe hold back on that one. What for you would be the, not necessarily, well, maybe the ideal line for the Leafs, but what would be the best line for Austin Matthews, the two best players? Would it be simply Marner and Nylander, or does it have to be players that bring up something different, like what Hyman does? And we know the offensive, you know, deficiencies in him. What would you think would be the best line?
I think it'd be interesting to see Connor Brown on the left, with either Nylander or Marner on the right. But again, like, that gets back to a few things. Like, that's the balance of your lineup. Like, is your lineup better by having Connor Brown somewhere else where he can, you know, help on a different line, whereas, you know, Zach Hyman is limited in terms of, like, what he might be able to bring to a different combination? Like, let's say, like, instead of using, I don't know, like, I don't even know where you put Hyman if it's not with Matthews. Maybe
it's almost like without Matthews there, Hyman's value is so drastically reduced that,
well, the obvious spot, like, is, I don't know, do you play him on a fourth line? But then, like, they have Matt Martin for some reason, like, on their fourth line.
And they got
I just don't know what it does to the balance of your lineup. And I do think there is something to what Mike Babcock says, and maybe, not maybe, he overdoes it, obviously. But, like, there is something to the fact that Hyman is a really good forechecker, that he is hard on the puck, that he does get pucks back.
We saw that in the Calgary game.
When he sets up Zaitsev.
Fought off Giordano and got
right
up to Zaitsev.
Like, there is something to that. There's also something to the fact that Matthews creates all these opportunities that Zach Hyman can't finish because he just isn't talented that way in terms of his hands. But I think, like, it's bigger than just one player. Like, it's Mike Babcock is looking at his lineup as a whole and saying, like, how am I going to get the best possible lineup, not just the best possible line? And regardless of who Matthews plays with, he's going to bring those guys up. Like, that's the same thing. That's maybe, you know, why McDavid is just a little tick higher. Like, it's how you can drag up.
Look at Leon Draisaitl's contract he got in the offseason.
Right. And so now the question is, like, what is Leon Draisaitl without Connor McDavid?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Crosby. Like, he's bringing up Connor Sheary and Connor Sheary scoring 20 goals.
Yeah.
He's bringing up Chris Kunitz. Like, how good are these guys without them? It's like, I don't know. I find it more easily applicable sometimes in basketball because you can see the effect that LeBron has on, like, James Jones and, like,
or how about in football, Andy Dalton is a good quarterback when AJ Green is there. When AJ Green is injured, Andy Dalton is bottom five in the league.
Well, and you used to see this with Peyton Manning. Like, they'd have all these, like, semi-scrub receivers. I'm not including, like, Marvin Harrison or Reggie Wayne because those are really good receivers, but they'd have all, like, these slot guys. I'm trying to remember some of their names. And suddenly they play with Peyton Manning and they would just become good receivers. And then they go somewhere else and they're mm-hmm. not as good. Same yeah. thing with Tom Brady. Same thing.
Eli Manning, all these quarterbacks.
Right. Like, that's what they do.
Yeah.
And so that's what great players like Matthews can do. Like, you can put lesser players and they can make them better. But there's also the fact that guys like Hyman can negate something too. Like, so it's like in Roto. Like, if you play Roto for fantasy sports, like, some guys help you in rebounds, but they drag you down in free throw percentage. Some guys help you in assists, but then they can't shoot threes.
Yeah.
So I just think there's, like, this constant balance. I don't know if that answers your question.
No. Listen, there's no such thing as the definitive right answer. Sometimes just searching for an answer gives you, you'll rarely get the 100% answer. And that's sort of what, you know, what this conversation is about. All right, going to get off hockey.
Wait, can I say one more thing?
Of course you can. It's a podcast.
So I think,
like, I'm not throwing a break.
I think one of the things that happens in hockey especially, and it happened, like, Zach Hyman's a really good example, is people would say, you know, he shouldn't play there. They should put someone else there. But then it's the same thing when people say they should fire the coach. But then there's another step. Like, there's another step after, okay, well, what do you do next?
Yeah.
So let's say you're not going to play Hyman with Matthews. Okay, who are you going to play there?
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at their left wings and you're like, well, no one really fits. Like, you're not going to play Van Riemsdyk with Matthews. Probably not. Because, again, Matthews is a shooter. Maybe that makes sense. Maybe, you know, Van Riemsdyk can capitalize on some of those opportunities that Hyman can't. Maybe it would work. But it's balance of your lineup. It's like, it's the second question that doesn't often get answered, I think, in hockey.
Well, you know, as fans, more of us.
Media do it too.
I know. And I was going to say media as well, but just fire the coach. Then what? I don't care. Fire the coach.
Right.
Fire the coach.
So, like, who are you hiring that's better? Like, yeah. if you're moving Hyman, like, who are you putting there that makes more sense? And, like, I remember, again, like, on that panel, like, someone said, you know, they shouldn't play Hyman with Matthews. I'm like, okay, well, who are you going to play there? And then it's like they haven't thought through.
Yeah, because sometimes the real thought and analysis, that's not fun. The get rid of that guy, put that guy, that's the fun part.
Right.
Actually, just speaking of JVR, he might be playing tonight with Kadri and Komarov. That's kind of interesting because it was always JVR and Bozak. We're always the two veterans hanging out together. I'm just, the one thing I love Babcock every night. I'm fine with him. Flip all the lines. Try all these different combinations because, and I said this before the season begun, the Leafs are good enough. They're making the playoffs. And before the season began, I'm like, unless there is a wide rash of injuries, the Leafs, I can guarantee, are making the playoffs. So even if it means some bumps along the way and some inconsistency, switch all the lines 100 times. As long as by April, you've got the best expression of each line, that's all I care about from Babcock.
Well, I think it shows that the stakes this year are different. Like last year, he kept the lines intact. The year didn't, like, he knew what that year was. It wasn't, they weren't winning a cup. If they made the playoffs, great. This year, it's like you're actually contemplating, like, how best do you optimize the lineup so when it comes April, you can win a round and then you can win two. And so what combinations are going to give you the best balance, which are going to give you the best look? Like the Van Riems, like with Kadri thing, like those guys haven't played together in a couple of years.
Yeah.
They didn't play together like at all last year.
I know, that's why, and I understand the minutiae of this conversation. We're looking at one of the lines and it could change. And hell, midway in the second period, if the Leafs are down 4-0, it could change. But when I saw that, it just caught my attention.
Well, and like you look at the playoffs last year, Van Riemsdyk, Bozak, Marner was a big liability for the Leafs in the, against the Capitals. They're going to have to figure out what lineup they can construct that when they get to the playoffs in the spring, you don't get filled in with one of your lines. Like, what gives you the best balance? I think he's like trying to figure all these things out. I do think it's interesting, and he should have been better held to account. And I'll take responsibility in that because maybe I should have just asked the question. For one day saying that he wasn't going to play Matthews with Marner, and then literally the next day playing with Matthews with Marner. You can't have it both ways. Like, you can't just completely dismiss it out of hand and then literally do it the next day.
Is Babcock getting a little more testy? Because we saw, like, what was the incident? Because I was away. There was an incident where, I forget, some reporter was asking about Marner.
Yeah, it was Rosie DiManno.
It was Rosie DiManno from the Star. Okay.
Part of it was she didn't, I don't think she asked the question the right way. Like, she included, like, why are you not playing Matt Martin with Matthews and Marner? I think that's, I wasn't there for it, but I think that's the, it was the context of all three guys.
Yeah.
He's like, and he got defensive. Like, you're not going to tell me how to coach the team, basically.
Yeah.
For which he eventually apologized. Coaches don't like to be told what to do.
And especially not by, media. Behind closed doors, another coach saying, hey, that's one thing. But in the media, yeah, okay.
But, like, I mean, he's second-guessed coaches on other teams himself.
That's true. So. He's second-guessed McClellan about the amount of minutes that Connor McDavid plays.
Yeah, and so I have a story that's going up on Friday about exactly that along those lines. So, I don't know.
Okay, we're going to get into the Austin Matthews minutes question in a second. But, Jonas, how come you don't tweet?
What do you mean I do?
You do not tweet.
What does that mean?
Do you? Okay, how much do you tweet that is not a link?
Nothing.
Or a thank
well,
you?
Well, no, I tweet, like, quotes or stats.
Okay,
or,
so you do. Here's what you tweet: quotes, stats, the
stories,
lineups, and then links to your articles or links to other articles on The Athletic. And I'm just curious. And there's like, I don't think this is a positive or a negative. It just is. You're someone who doesn't. And there's a couple like Dave Feschuk never tweets. James Myrtle tweets a lot. Yeah. Bruce Arthur tweets more than anyone else. And somewhere we all fit somewhere in between all that. How come? I'm just curious. Your way of conducting yourself in social media. I'm curious how come you don't.
A few things.
Yeah.
One, I'm private. Like, I don't feel like I need to be sharing what I have for dinner or, like, what I think on literally everything.
Mm-hmm. So you go see Lady Bird and you don't explain that this movie, it's kind of like elements of Rushmore and everyone should go see it?
No, and I don't think I'm adding... What am I adding to the conversation when Matthew scores a great goal and I say... Wow. Like, and I tweet that. Like, what value is that?
Nothing. That does nothing.
So it does nothing.
Yeah.
Two, like, I don't think for me, I don't want to live in that world. Like, I find that people sit on that thing, like, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and just constantly scrolling, constantly, like, being on it.
Yeah.
And not actually, like, just sitting outside and just thinking for yourself and, like, watching and not being, like, I don't like the feeling sometimes, like, when you're on Twitter and you're just scrolling through. I find it like it's this weird sensation that you get where you're just like you're constantly looking for something else. And then there's the other side of it that I don't think is good where it's like you constantly want to be rewarded for what you're saying. So you need like you're constantly looking for affirmation, whether it's a retweet or whether it's a like. I don't want to be searching for that all the time. I don't think that's healthy for me. So I choose to kind of limit how much I'm on there.
Yeah, it's
I thought a lot about it because I don't know. There's a balance between I need to be doing my job,
yes,
which is informing people, reporting on stuff, But I also am a human. Like, I need to do what I think is going to be good for, like, my mental well-being. And I don't think it's healthy for me watching a Raptor game last night to be constantly scrolling through Twitter and seeing everybody's thoughts about everything, as opposed to just watching the game and, like, thinking things for myself. And I think there's, like, a really dangerous thing on Twitter where it's, like, it becomes, like, this crowd idea.
The echo chamber.
The echo chamber. And it's just, like, you're just contributing to what everyone else thinks instead of just thinking for yourself. Yeah. I don't know. Like, there, I have a lot of thoughts about it. I've thought a lot about it. I just try to figure out what's best for me.
It's a great answer. And sometimes I think I'm on it too much. I'm an information junkie, and I've set up my Twitter account where I don't just follow for writers or, people beyond sports. I don't just follow left wing because I found I had a lot more just left wing. Like, I got to get some right wing. Even if I don't always agree with that, I want to hear what they're saying because I feel in touch with one side. So I'm an information junkie. So part of me, I love just getting all this wealth of information. But sometimes I'll be sitting there and I'll be refreshing and checking. And I will think to myself, what are you doing? You got to just put it down.
Well, it's just like people. It's just like, think of it like if it was the real world, it would just be like people are yelling their opinions.
Yeah.
Constantly. And like the ones like trying to get you to pay attention. And like, I'm not sure that that's good. Like, do you ever watch that show Black Mirror?
No.
Okay. So you need to watch that show.
All right.
But there's this really interesting episode. And what that show basically is, it's like looks into the future and tries to predict where things are going. And there was this episode where people are constantly rating each other based on their interactions. And so they have like, they're constantly like, so you get into a cab or you talk to someone on the street and they give you like a 5-star rating.
Yeah, the Uber
you're
stuff.
Constantly like, yeah, you're constantly trying to get people to like you based on the reviews they give you. And I don't know, like that kind of seems where it's going.
Hold on, I love this idea. I'll tell you why. Because you know what we don't have in society? We don't have enough judging and shaming. And do you know how I know this? Because I see litter on the ground. Litter to me is something that always confuses me. It's the ultimate act of pure ego, of just self-entitlement.
Well,
I am done with this. I'm going to throw it on the ground. But if you knew that by throwing that Coke can on the ground, someone else is going to say, I just saw this person put a face on, they just littered, and then bad review. And then if it goes to some motherboard of information, maybe everyone would mind their P's and Q's a little bit more if we're all judging each other.
Well, but when you see someone litter on the street, do you say anything? Like, I'm thinking, like, I see it all the time. Like, walking downtown Toronto, I see someone litter. I'm like, should I say something? Should I be like, why don't you just put that in the garbage can? It's right there.
I don't say anything, but I'll tell you why.
Because, like, it's a scary world. Like, who knows what the person's going
to
do?
Also, look at me. Do you think I'm going to physically try to confront anyone? But I'm a hero. You know what I did even today? Someone left that a paper towel on the ground on the bathroom floor at TSN. I grabbed a fresh paper towel. I picked up the one on the floor in the garbage and threw it in the garbage because I'm like, I don't like going into a bathroom and seeing a mess. I'm assuming the next person in also doesn't want that. So basically what I'm saying is I'm a hero.
Yes. Yeah. I just think like we have to be, I don't know. I think we have to be really careful about like the reliance on social media for everything. Like,
yeah.
It drives me crazy when I'm having a beer with someone and they just pull out their phone and they're just
it's the worst.
Stuff. And I just don't understand it. Like when I go out with someone, like the phone stays in my pocket.
Yeah.
Even if I get a text most times, like I just leave it. Mm. I don't know. I just think it's like relying on this fake world.
Of course.
Weird.
Well, the hard part about social media, and I feel bad for parents for this, is we don't know the full impact it's having on adults, and we certainly don't know on kids.
Well, and they've been studying on kids. It's not
Yeah, they've
good.
Been studying on kids. How many years have they been studying on it?
Not enough.
Not enough. And here's the thing. Television came out, started to become popular, say, 1950. I might be off by a couple of years. So between 1950 and 1995, there was no internet. So you had 40 plus years of psychologists and psychiatrists and experts were able to study the impact of TV on the child, on the adult, on the family unit, and all these things. But now you had internet, MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and we have no idea what the full impact of social media is because it takes decades to study this. And as you start studying it, there's something new that's come along. And you never had that with TV or TV, VHS, DVD, but it was all kind of the same thing.
Well, I think actually they're doing like stuff. They're looking into this stuff and the effect that it has. And it brings to mind like an article I read. I think it was I don't know. I don't want to say the magazine because I don't remember. I think it was New York Times Magazine.
Yeah.
And basically they interviewed a bunch of like teenage girls about Instagram, and they were just...
I read this article.
Yeah. And, yeah. And basically what a lot of the girls that they interviewed were saying is like, they just want to do stuff that gets them likes. And so whatever they like, whatever picture is going to get them the most likes, that's what they're trying to do. Because like when you get a like, it's like you get this little shot of dopamine, I think, like in your brain where it's like a positive reward. And so like, that's one of the things that I think, even for me, I think like, I don't want to be chasing that. And I think it's really like, I even find myself, it's like when you get retweets on a story or like, that's why I don't check mentions, because even negative, like as much as the negative stuff is bad, I think the positive stuff is just as harmful, because it's like you're chasing like...
It can be crippling in its own way.
Yeah, because you're like chasing confirmation from people. And I don't know that that's healthy, to just be chasing confirmation from others on the outside as opposed to like just trying to confirm things for yourself.
So then what you're saying is, every time I read a Jonas Siegel article in The Athletic, when I go to the bottom and I can rank it, I should put the middle one, not meh or not excellent. There's one in the middle, and I should just click the middle one, like the porridge is just right.
Well, what's interesting about that is like, you think about the way media has been done forever. It's like, there's never been this way really for readers to say like what they like and what they don't like. So that's good in a way. But again, just like the possession stuff, that's only going to be one part of the equation. Like The Athletic, whoever's in charge, has to know, they have to be reading stuff themselves and saying that's good, independent of whether a lot of people retweeted. You know what I mean? Like there has to be more to it. And yet the data is good, because like now we're finding ways to measure what's going on.
Go back to the Leafs for a second. One thing I've been yelling about is that I'm really excited about the Maple Leafs, because, you know, 8 points up on Detroit, second in the Atlantic, and their record, they're like 16-9-1 or something like that. Last year at this time, they were 11-11-5. Around that, I think my number might be off by one. I think, I guess, 11-11-4. I can add to 26. And so their record is better, and they're in firmly in second right now. It's still early, but they've done that with Anderson having a horrible October, Marner and Nylander struggling in terms of overall production, and Austin Matthews missing 4 games, and Austin Matthews being about 89th in terms of ice time for forwards.
Oh, is that what you're getting at? That's where that
eventually we're getting
there.
We'll get specifically to Matthews' ice time, but I think the Leafs, for being 16-9-1, is actually impressive. When if I just listed all those things at the beginning of the year and said Nylander would go 18 games with one goal, and Marner would go with only, you know, this many goals, and all these other things, you would expect the record to be worse. It's pretty damn good.
I don't think they've had... I don't know. I wonder how many, if you counted the games, that they played really well. Like, I thought they played...
And that's another thing.
I thought they played really well against Calgary. I thought they were good against Washington. But there's like a handful of games that you could count where you're like, that's what they should look like. That's what they should be. Like, there was a Chicago game,
the Blackhawks,
where Matthews
game
was just insane for 2 periods. But like, there's not a lot of games that you'd look at and be like, you'd be like they played great. Like, I have like all the games here on my laptop. I'm just like going to scroll through. This is great radio. Yeah, Carolina, Florida, no. Not really. Arizona, no. Montreal, no. Like, they haven't played well in a lot of these games. And a lot of these
People need to see your Microsoft Excel sheet. This is pretty impressive. But for me, that excites me.
Because
I think the team has that higher level. I think they have that Blackhawks in them. And if you can go 16-9-1 without exhibiting it that much, eventually your Bruce Banner is going to Hulk out. And if that happens over a stretch, especially in April and May, that could be pretty fun.
But Mike Babcock made this point recently, and I think it's a good one. Good teams win when they play bad. Like, that's just what they do. Like, they're more talented. Like,
ding, ding.
Like the Cleveland Cavaliers, because they have LeBron, they can play like shit for 3 quarters and then win, because they just have more talent. And that's like a lot of these cases, they just have more talent. They can score relatively easy, but they have a tendency that they can score easier than other teams. So like the game against Carolina, they play horribly and win.
Yeah.
And so like
horrible in that game.
And so that's like, that's what good teams can do. Like, they didn't play, you go back to some of these earlier games. Like, I remember Detroit was in town,
6-3 win.
Detroit outplayed them. They won 6-3 because they can just score easier than other teams because they have so much more talent.
Do you swear this much on the podcast with James Myrtle?
Probably.
I don't know about that.
James doesn't swear that much.
No. Should Matthews be playing more minutes?
So I'm writing a story on this. Actually, it's basically already written. I just have to update it with the stats from the Oilers game.
All right.
No.
Okay.
I don't think... Actually, the headline of the story is the Leafs don't have to play Matthews as much as McDavid.
Okay.
And they just don't need to. Like, Edmonton sort of needs to, although you can make a case that they shouldn't be playing him as much as they are. Like, I don't know. Yeah,
they're playing McDavid.
Ways,
by the way, they're playing McDavid that many minutes, and they're still the second worst team in the West.
Yeah. Well, they don't have... It's a lot... There's so many layers to this whole thing. One, they don't have Toronto's depth. So, like, they feel like their best chance to win is just to play McDavid a ton.
Yeah.
Because if not, where are they going to get goals? Where are they going to get good shifts? So there's that. Do you need to be having McDavid kill penalties? Maybe. Maybe not. Like, maybe that's minutes that you could save and give to someone else. Like, Matthews doesn't play ever on the penalty kill and probably won't. And yet you can make the case, like, Chicago uses Taves and had been using Hossa before this year. And it's, like, really threatening to a power play when someone like that is out there. So, like, you can make that case.
Wait, Matthews would be...
insane. Like, same
thing. He'd be a great penalty killer.
Right, but, like, but what Mike Babcock is thinking is, like, I need to, like, make sure he's good over 82 games and then into the playoffs. So, like, last year, I've already done the numbers. Like, I think he played 287 minutes more than Matthews last year, which is the equivalent of, like, more than four games. It's like full games.
Yeah, full games. That's like four, like a little over
four.
So
by the time the playoffs come around, that's all, like, if you space that out, what does that equal? Like 20 minutes a game? Like, that's a lot more games that he's basically put on his body. Who didn't have a great playoffs? McDavid. Mm-hmm. Who did? Matthews. And obviously McDavid went a couple rounds and Matthews didn't. But the point is, like, Mike Babcock is thinking long term. Like, what's going to be best for Matthews in April and May, and if they get there, June? And yet you can also make a case that maybe you play him a little bit more because he's 20 years old. He's in the prime of his career. Like, there are numbers that suggest that primes are earlier than we think.
Yeah.
And that if you can get more shifts out of Matthews, you have more chance to win a game. But Mike Babcock, I think, is thinking bigger picture. There's, like, lots of layers to it.
Yeah, I don't mind. Like, I find it curious when I see the lack of minutes. And then when he's here, like, it's 89th, then... My first thought is, what the bleep? Come playoffs, I expect, you know, that's going
to... But if you have other good forwards, why do you need to overuse...
I don't think you need to, but in play, I think in some playoff games, I'm okay.
I'm
talking the playoffs. It's like in the NBA. I only need eight guys out there in the postseason.
Well, it's like the Greg Popovich thing. Like, he had this... I don't know if it was like a strict rule, but he wouldn't play Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, any of those guys, even Kawhi... Like, he wouldn't play them more than, like, 33 minutes a game, something like that. So that by the time the playoffs came, they had that extra fuel in their tank. And meanwhile, like, one of the criticisms of the Cavs is, like, they play LeBron, like, 38 minutes a game.
And every year, it's like, we're going to play LeBron less. And then you look up, he's like, wait a minute, he's averaging almost 40 minutes a night.
Well, and so there has to be something to it that by the time the playoffs come around, all those, like, five extra minutes a game times 80 games or however many of these guys play.
82.
No, but, like, I mean, like, whether they're playing 75 games.
Oh, okay,
right.
Yeah,
so that must add up on your body.
Yeah.
So, like, if you can do little things to make yourself fresher throughout the year, don't you think that makes sense? Like,
of course, except for LeBron. LeBron doesn't count because he is a robot.
But this is one of the benefits, and this is, like, the point of the story that I've written, is when you have good players, you can spread those minutes around. Like, you can give Matthews 18, you can give Van Riemsdyk 15, you can give Marner 16. Like, you have all these good players that you can take some of those minutes and siphon them off. So they don't need to kill penalties with Matthews because they have Hyman and they have Brown and they have Komarov.
Poor Ron Hainsey.
And because they have a really good first power play unit, they don't need to use Matthews for 4 minutes on the power play. They use him for two. Whereas, like, you look at Alexander Barkov in Florida, he's playing like 5 minutes a game on the power play. He's killing like 2 minutes of penalties.
He's
playing like 23 minutes a game. Bob Bugner obviously feels like, you know, I don't have someone else who can give me those minutes effectively. And yet, you know, he might be burning Barkov out.
So the summation is Matthews not playing heavy minutes is a reflection on how good the Maple Leafs overall roster is.
And their big picture thinking about like where they want to go.
Yeah.
So, like, do you want to... I don't know. Like, it's a lot more minutes to play McDavid. And yet, look at their team. They don't have as many good forwards. So Todd McClellan's probably like thinking, you know, shit, I got to win this game. Like, if I have to play McDavid 22 minutes, I'm going to do it.
You know what would help the Oilers? Taylor Hall. I think a Taylor Hall type would.
But you know what's funny? Like, James and I were texting about that the other day. They are like an example of how you can... I feel like I keep swearing, so I won't.
Yeah, you know, you've already sworn three times. And because like, I like to say I'm going to beep it out, but I'm not because I don't know how to. And it's a pain in the ass to try to beep it out.
It's not really that hard. All you have to do is like...
No, but I have to go back...
I used to do this in radio. It's
yeah, but
hard.
I have to time code it, and I haven't. Okay, so you've sworn twice. Yeah, so...
So basically, they are an example of how you can screw things up.
Mm-hmm.
You can... Like, it doesn't take that much to put yourself in a tough bind. Chicago's another good example. Like, obviously, they've won three cups. They've done things right. But like they've also made some mistakes that hurt them, like signing Brett Seabrook for 8 years or whatever it was. So the Oilers have done some things that have hurt their depth. You know, they trade Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
For an okay defenseman. You know, not...
No, Larson's good.
He's fine. But they've hurt their forward group, you know, and they took the money basically that they were paying Taylor Hall and signed Milan Lucic, who is a lot worse of a player. They say we're going to trade Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strome to save a little bit of money, you know, for McDavid, for Dreisaitl. And then they take a little bit of that money and they give it to Chris Russell. So like there are these moves you can make that can really screw yourself up. We have like a really small one in Toronto with Matt Martin where they have him for two more years after this, where the good thing for them is that if they ever get to that point, they can bury some of that money in the minors, but not all of it. But like you can screw it up. You know, we may find that Nikita Zaitsev giving him 7 years when you really didn't have to give him 7 years could end up hurting them. Like there's Patrick Marleau. Like there are lots of these little things that can really hurt you in a cap world, I guess is the long answer.
By the way, I just remember the Chris Russell watch. Every like so many Leaf fans are just, please don't sign him. But like just I remember that narrative. Before we end this, what are the Giants doing with Eli Manning? And listen, I get the idea Eli Manning is having a poor year. And last year he had a good year, not a great year. People forget how good he was a couple seasons ago. For me it's a Giants fan, they're 2-9. If you're gonna bench him, then put in, you know, Wade Davis or is that what I think is, I don't remember his name. There's some rookie. But why are you putting in Geno Smith? Geno Smith sucks.
And you know what Geno Smith is. Do you know what it reminded me of? And it's not the same thing, but it reminded me of when the Leafs tried to trade Matt Sundin.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't do it, and then he was like villainized for it.
Yeah.
You just don't treat someone like who has been that to your franchise that way. Like he's won you two Super Bowls. Does he have two Super Bowl MVPs?
Yes, he does. One more than Peyton.
He is like an icon. I don't care. I was going to swear again. Sorry, I caught myself. I don't care. Like it shouldn't matter. Like that the fact that you want a tank or like that you want a high draft pick. When it's someone like that, when it's like someone like on your all timers, grin and bear it and let him play. Like you're sucking anyway. You're 2-9. So like, you just have to suck it up, let him play the final weeks, and then part ways. Like you don't do that to an icon. Like the way that it was framed with Sundin that kind of resonated most with me was like, would the Red Wings do this with Nick Lidstrom? No. Like you don't do that.
No.
To like,
because it sends a bad message to the rest
horrible.
Of the league. Yeah,
it's just not a way to treat someone who's done so much for your team. Then again, like he was paid. Like it's not like he was a volunteer.
No. Oh yeah. Of course. Don't shed a tear for him. He's had a fantastic career. He won't make the Hall of Fame, but he's had a damn memorable career. I'm a Giants fan.
Nah, he won't.
I'm fine with him not making the Hall of Fame. I just know that in the playoffs, he was a better postseason quarterback than his brother. But his brother had a better career. No one's going to argue that. I think that's a reasonable take by me.
Fair.
Jonas, thank you so much for joining us a second time. Really appreciate you taking the time, dropping the knowledge, and Leafs taking on Edmonton. You know, I'm wrapping up like I'm back on radio. This is a podcast. Some might be listening to this 3 days later.
You can just say bye.
Bye, Jonas.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.